Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Wealth and Poverty, A New Edition for the 21st Century by George Gilder is a nonfiction work of economic and social commentary that argues for a moral and practical defense of supply-side capitalism. First published in 1981 and updated in 2012, the book became closely associated with Reagan-era economic thinking and later conservative critiques of big government policy. Gilder combines economics with sociology and anthropology to explain why some societies generate wealth while others remain trapped in poverty. His central claim is that prosperity depends not only on markets and investment, but also on work, family stability, personal responsibility, and risk-taking. The book is written as an intervention in public policy debates, challenging demand-side economics and redistribution as solutions to poverty. It is not a technical economics text. Rather, it is a broad argument about the cultural and moral foundations of economic growth, aimed at readers who want to understand capitalism as a social system as well as an economic one. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, supply-side economics as the engine of growth, a core theme of the book is Gilder's defense of supply-side economics, which he presents as the most effective framework for creating wealth and reducing poverty. Instead of treating demand and government spending as the main drivers of prosperity, he argues that production, investment, and entrepreneurial risk are what actually expand an economy. In his view, policies that focus mainly on redistributing income may relieve immediate hardship, but they do not generate the new goods, jobs, and capital formation needed for long-term growth. This makes the book both economic and political. Gilder is not simply describing market behavior, but arguing that policy should reward creation rather than consumption. The updated edition extends this claim to contemporary debates, insisting that free market incentives remain the strongest path to broad prosperity. Whether readers agree with him or not, the logic of the book is consistent wealth is created from the supply side, and policy should be designed to support those who produce, invest, and take risks. Secondly, work, family, and faith as the social base of prosperity, Gilder does not treat economics as separate from culture. One of the book's distinctive arguments is that wealth depends on social habits and moral expectations, especially work discipline, family formation, and religious belief. He sees the nuclear family as a stabilizing institution that shapes responsibility, supports labor participation, and channels male energy into productive roles. In this view, poverty is not only an income problem, but also a breakdown in the institutions that teach discipline and long-term commitment. Faith matters because it provides moral order and a sense of duty beyond short-term self-interest. This framework is one reason the book stands out among economics titles. It links macroeconomic performance to the everyday structure of social life. Gilder's argument is controversial because it assigns major explanatory weight to family and morality, but that is also what gives the book its identity. He presents prosperity as a social achievement, not merely a market outcome, and he treats personal conduct as economically consequential. Thirdly, a moral case for capitalism, not only a practical one. The book is not content to argue that capitalism works better than alternatives. It also claims that capitalism is morally superior. Gilder's famous insists that capitalism begins with giving captures his view that successful markets depend on trust, delayed reward, and the willingness to commit capital before profits are certain. This is a different kind of defense than a purely efficiency-based one. He portrays the capitalist as a risk-bearer who creates opportunities for others. And he suggests that entrepreneurs and investors perform a socially valuable function that deserves respect rather than suspicion. That moral framing matters because it allows the book to criticize not only policy, but also the cultural attitudes that treat wealth creation as suspect. Gilder argues that the market rewards responsibility and foresight, while excessive reliance on redistribution weakens the habits that make prosperity possible. This theme helps explain why the book became influential in conservative economic thought. It translates market economics into an ethical vision, presenting capitalism as a system aligned with human flourishing rather than just material output. Fourthly, why Gilder rejects demand-side and redistribution-focused policy. A substantial part of the book is a critique of demand-side economics and government redistribution. Gilder argues that policies centered on consumption support, welfare expansion, or broad transfers can unintentionally create moral hazard by weakening incentives to work, save, and invest. In his view, big government approaches may address symptoms of poverty, but often leave the causes untouched, or even worsen them by reducing the rewards for productive behavior. The book's historical setting is important here. Gilder was responding to inflation, recession, and urban distress in the 1970s. And later editions reframed the argument around contemporary debates over government intervention. He repeatedly contrasts market-led growth with what he sees as bureaucratic planning and dependency. This is not a neutral policy survey. It is a polemical argument that tries to show how welfare-style solutions can fail to build durable prosperity. Readers gain insight into one of the clearest intellectual statements of late 20th century anti-status economics, even if they ultimately reject its conclusions. Lastly, the updated edition as a commentary on modern economic anxiety. The 21st century edition matters because it shows how Gilder reused the original framework to interpret newer economic conditions. Rather than treating the 1981 book as a historical artifact, the revised version argues that the same basic principles still apply to contemporary stagnation, inequality, and poverty. This makes the book useful as a case study in how older supply-side ideas were adapted for a new political era. The updated edition also sharpens the book's tone by contrasting free market capitalism with expanded government intervention in the modern period. That gives the reader not only an economic argument, but also a snapshot of conservative economic criticism in the post-Reagan environment. The book's longevity suggests that it is valued less for technical forecasting than for its durable ideological framework. It remains relevant to readers who want to understand why supply-side economics has continued to shape policy debates, especially among those skeptical of redistribution and interested in the relationship between economic growth and social order. In conclusion, Wealth and Poverty is best suited for readers interested in economics, public policy, conservative political thought, and the social foundations of prosperity. It will be especially useful to students and general readers who want to understand the intellectual case for supply-side economics and the broader moral logic that has often accompanied it. The book offers practical value as a historical and ideological map of debates over taxation, welfare, entrepreneurship, and poverty policy. It also provides intellectual value by showing how economic arguments can be tied to questions of family structure, work ethic, and social responsibility. What distinguishes it from many books in the same genre is its unusual combination of market advocacy and moral sociology. Rather than treating capitalism as a purely technical system, Gilder presents it as a culture of discipline, risk, and giving. That makes the book more than a defense of free markets. It is a broader theory of why some societies generate opportunity while others stagnate. Readers looking for a nuanced critique of the book may also find it useful as a benchmark text in conservative economic thought. If you would like to support George Gilder, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.